Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, whatever time it is. Welcome to the Post Game Plan on the show. My name is Ali Samani. We talk about career development for current as well as former NBA athletes. And we have a very special guest with us today. His name is John Celestin, and he's actually co-founder of All-State Basketball, president of Celestin Consulting, a sports broadcaster. He went to Villanova and was selected 30th overall in the 1999 NBA draft by the Los Angeles Lakers. He's also an NBA champion. 1999-2000, he won with the Lakers, and I'm so happy to have him on board today. John, how you doing, man?
I'm doing excellent.
Awesome, man. You know, first question right off the bat, what age did you enter the league?
I entered the NBA when I was 21 years old, right out of college.
Right out of college.
Villanova University.
Okay. So how many years did you finish at Villanova?
I played all 4 years at Villanova University. I wasn't one of those guys that came in expecting to play 1 or 2 years and come out early. I was a pretty good high school player, but I wouldn't say I was one of the top 5 or 10 players in the country, although you couldn't tell me that back then. I knew I was going to stay 4 years and get my degree. I thought that was important for me. I got my degree in communications.
So you got your degree?
Really instilled a lot of education in me. She's a vice principal here at a high school in New Jersey and was a teacher for over 35 years. So
wow, okay.
I knew going in, I was going to get my education, and basketball was a means, I should say a tool to get that.
That's fantastic. Now, so did you graduate before going to the NBA, or did you graduate during your time at the end at the league?
Now, I graduated before I went to the NBA. I got my communications degree in the spring of 1999, right before the NBA draft.
So how do you think that helped you, like, while you were in your playing career for your first couple of years? Like, how do you think, obviously, there was an impact that it had on your, you know, you have a strong desire and concentration on education, even in terms of the speaking sessions and motivational seminars that you give. But how do you think that contributed in the first couple of years?
Well, I think it helped me tremendously because I think college on a whole is a you have a huge advantage over people who don't go to college. And that's no knock on some of the NBA guys that go straight to the NBA or leave. But I learned so much at Villanova University just about myself. I learned how to organize my time. I learned how to live on my own, which is very important when you're coming from high school, living with your parents or guardians or whoever you're living with, to going and living on your own and having to make your own decisions, and nobody's there to really guide you. You kind of learn how to be a man or a woman in college. So I think that was the biggest thing, during 4 years there, and just learning how to budget my time, how to be responsible, and also getting educated and learning to just live on my own.
Absolutely.
Because when you get out there in the real world, you know, sports or not, it's a tough world out there. And I'm sure you know right now with the way our economy is going, you know, you have to be able to take care of yourself out here.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, you spent a number of years in the league. Can you give me an idea of when exactly you started thinking about the fact that, you know, your time in the NBA is a limited time? It's not necessarily, you know, infinite in terms of your ability to play and the possibilities that you have from a basketball perspective, and you have to think about things outside of that.
Well, I don't think it was, I'll be honest with you, I don't think I thought about it early enough.
Okay.
You know, I think I started thinking about it after my NBA career was over, really more when I was in Europe.
Okay.
And I started to get a little bit towards the end of my career. Well, I was only 27 when I retired, 28 when I retired playing basketball.
Right.
And I could have played longer. But one of the big things that I saw was a lot of the older players that I knew who were still, like, searching when their career was over. They were 34, 35, 36 years old, not much of a resume, and trying to figure out what they were going to do. And a lot of athletes go through that, and it's not fun, because I went through it for a short period of time when I was finished. But I didn't know how intense that would be, and I didn't want to be that old and not have a resume and not have work experience, because one thing about being an athlete, it's great. You can make a lot of money depending on where you play, what league you play in. But the one disadvantage is that while you're playing sports, your peers, your friends, your relatives, they're all getting jobs at young ages. They're building a resume here in America or, you know, in corporate America. And so when you're done playing at whatever age that is, you miss out on all of those years of building that, you know, that corporate America resume or that work experience. So unless you make enough money where you can start your own business or something like that, you're put at a disadvantage in that aspect. So I didn't really want to be that athlete at 33, 34 trying to figure it out. So I kind of ended things a little bit early.
So can you tell me, I mean, you kind of alluded to a time where players go through this searching for yourself, searching for a purpose, searching for the next step phase. And you said that, you know, you kind of went through it briefly. Could you describe that for me and like some of the thoughts that were going through your head and some of the ways that you got through it and I guess the emotions and the process that you went through?
Yeah, it's very difficult. You know, really as an athlete, when I finished playing sports, I never had really done a resume. So to sit and have to go through and put together a resume, you know, it's difficult when you have other people who have done things like that since they were 21 years old.
Right.
As an athlete, you have a lot of things given to you or scheduled for you. You know, I knew as an athlete, hey, I have to be at practice at this time. I have to get up at this time. I have to train at this time. But when you get out in the real world, that's not the case anymore. You have to schedule your own time, you know, and I think that's a hard transition for a lot of athletes. And I don't know if I can really explain that to somebody unless you're an athlete to understand that when your day is scheduled for you, like it has been for so many years, whether it's college, high school, professional, it's very difficult when that's not taking place to know what to do with yourself. You know, that's a very big transition, and it's tough. And I think one of the biggest things that I got from another athlete, there was a friend of mine, his stepfather, his name was Darius Griffith. He played for Rutgers in the late 70s, early 80s, and he told me when it's all said and done, one of the biggest things that you're going to struggle with is that when you are a high school or college or professional athlete, people come to recruit you all the time. When you're in high school, they want you to play on the high school team. When you go to college, the recruiters come. They want you to play at Villanova, at Syracuse, or wherever you're going to play. Then once you play great, the NBA recruits you to come play for their team. They draft you. Well, then you get out in the real world, nobody's coming to get you anymore.
And
you have to go and sell yourself to people. You have to say, hey, this is what I'm good at. This is what I'm talented at. Will you hire me? Will you do business with me? And that is a very difficult transition for athletes who are so used to people always coming to get them.
It's very
difficult to have to go and ask people now for their help or to go and sell yourself, and that's rough.
Wow. Okay, so I have a lot of questions. Okay, so first question, who helped you with your resume, and did you get help, or is it something that you kind of, like, searched online and just found resources?
Well, my wife helped me over my resume. At that time, she was my girlfriend, but she was already in corporate America. She was working for a home builder, and I actually asked her for help. You know, she understood that I wasn't, you know, dumb or anything like that. I just didn't have the experience of doing something like that. So
she
sat down with me and helped me really put that together.
Okay, that's very important. Now, that being said, you talked about that whole little transition about finding, you know, you got to have to sell yourself. What tips do you think you can give players about selling yourself? Because, I mean, that's something that I guess athletes are really not accustomed to, because playing a professional sport from the time that you were young comes second nature. When you're 20, 22, 23, it comes second nature. And then jumping into the professional world is like a complete deviation from the regular things that you're, you know, involved with. So how do you sell yourself? How do you present yourself?
Okay, I understand. Well, the first thing is you have to get over just the fact that you're a professional athlete.
Okay.
And when I say that, I mean you have to get over that awe factor that you are, you know, Kobe Bryant. I'm just using Kobe as an example, or John Sarsden or whoever, and realize that in the real world, that's great. It's a great talking point, but you still have to have a skill set, or you still have to have qualities that helps a company or a business. You can't just walk in and just say, hey, I'm Shaquille O'Neal, and give me a job.
Right.
So that's hard for an athlete because usually you can just show up and perform and people want you. Well, you can't perform. You can't use that athleticism to perform anymore. You have to use other things. So I think you have to figure out what you're good at outside of sports. And that's the difficult part because most of our lives we've been great at being an athlete. And we focus so much time in being an athlete. And you can't really think of a plan B when you're trying to be a successful athlete because you have to almost put all your eggs in that basket to be that great at what you do. So I think you have to just try to figure out what else am I good at? I may not be as good at it as I was playing basketball or football, but what am I good at? And
right.
That may be different than what you like to do. You know, you can be good at something and not like it. So I think you have to find out what you're good at, and then you have to find out what you like to do. And then if you can find like a combination in there where you're good at something and you like to do it, then I think you can start to go out and sell yourself, hey, this is who I am outside of sports. But it's easier said than done.
Absolutely.
Easier said than done.
Any tools that you use to determine these things, like any types of tests or I guess one of the ways I think is just speaking to people and learning about what they're doing and seeing if that interests you.
Yeah, I think that's a huge point. You know, one of the biggest mistakes that I think I made as an athlete is in the off season when I wasn't playing. Obviously, athletes we have to work out a lot.
Right.
But I think in that off season, when you work out, if you're basketball, football, you work out for those 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, you still have the rest of the day to do nothing.
Right.
And many athletes, they're doing nothing. Either you're partying, you're hanging out, you're doing nothing. That's time where you can go and maybe intern somewhere. Or maybe work, even if it's for free. I mean, most of us athletes are making good money. To get that experience and figure out what you like. I never did that. But if I could rewind the hands of time and go back, I would do that. Because I think I would have understood what I like to do at an earlier age than than the time that I took after I retired, if you know what I mean. So
absolutely.
That's one of the best things you can do is go get some experience. And sometimes you have to humble yourself. You may have to go do data entry, or you may have to answer some phone somewhere, but it's good experience outside of sports.
Yeah. Now, did you, while you were playing, did you take any types of courses or any types of training sessions or anything like that to learn about other areas or knowledge yourself on like a computer or, you know, a business or anything like that?
Well, unfortunately, I have to admit I didn't.
Okay.
And that's why I say the athletes that are coming after me, I would suggest that they do those type of things. You know, I learned a lot of my computer skills at the first job that I took. When I first retired from basketball, it took me a year to find a job. I got involved with a sports marketing company that put together college basketball events like the Coaches versus Cancer Classic, the CBE Classic that you may see on ESPN today. And I learned a lot of my skills at that job. But if I would have had those skills beforehand, you know, computer skills, you know, working with Microsoft Word, working with Excel, working with, you know, online advertising, Dreamweaver, things like that, I would have been so much further along in that job if I had those skills before I started working there.
Absolutely. Now, tell me a little bit about Celestin Consulting and when that started and what your motivation was for that, for the whole initiative in the business.
Well, I wanted to start a business for myself. You know, I read a lot of books on being an entrepreneur and knew that, you know, working for other people, I wouldn't say was the end-all, be-all for me. I understood that I had to get a job and I had to go out there and work. I didn't make millions and millions of dollars playing in the NBA overseas. So I had to go get a job. But I knew in the long run I wouldn't be happy unless I was doing something for myself. It didn't have to be full-time, but it had to be something. So I started Celestin Consulting as a consulting business for my announcing. I was a freelance announcer. I was working for ESPN. I was working for Comcast Sportsnet, MSG, Madison Square Garden Network here in New York. I was doing some radio for ISP Sports, which has become IMG College Radio. And I said, you know what, since I am a freelance announcer, why not just start my own business and offer my services to a lot of different media outlets?
Right.
And that's how Celestin Consulting started. It gave me the ability to write off some things, write off mileage for my business. And it also gave me the ability to, you know, go to school districts and say, hey, I'd love to come in and speak to your kids, you know, and they would be able to pay me as a business as opposed to having me, you know, have to be an employee of that school district. So it's really, you know, worked well for me. You know, I haven't blown up into a multi-millionaire or anything like that, but it's given me the ability to go and work as a consultant for different businesses and already have that ready to go.
Now, I know that you're an entrepreneur. You kind of mentioned that you've read a couple of books on entrepreneurialism and that kind of fit your personality. Is that one of the reasons why you picked freelance versus, you know, working for one specific organization?
Yeah, I like freelance because it gave me more flexibility to work for a lot of different networks. You know, just to be honest with you, you have some great announcers at ESPN, Jay Billis. You have Dick Vitale. You have a good friend of mine, Bill Lafferty. Tons of guys who have been there for years, and they're not going anywhere. Those guys are going to be there for years. And I knew, you know, for me to be able to get to that level, I was going to have to work in a lot of different venues. I wasn't going to walk into ESPN and say, hey, put me on a set and let me work on ESPN too. So, I made sure I kept my options open. And I got into freelance contracts where I could work with ESPN Regional, but I could work with Comcast down in Philadelphia where I went to school at Villanova. I could do some radio. You know, and if people wanted to pick me up for the NCAA tournament or some things like that, I could do that as well. So I think I wanted to keep my options open and not be tied down to one network. And I think it worked out well for me.
Absolutely. Now, why did you pick sports broadcasting as opposed to investing in a business or, you know, a lot of players – some of the things that I hear are players are investing in different types of business, whether it's a restaurant or, you know, barbershops or real estate, things like that. Why did you pick sports broadcasting?
I just think sports broadcasting was a challenge for me and also was something that I aspired to. You know, growing up, I majored in communications, took some classes in journalism, took some classes in media and film. So I kind of knew that I wanted to transition into that. I didn't know exactly that how far I would go, but it was an exciting career. And, you know, investments in different things are tough. You know, you have to do a lot of research on those things if you're investing in a barbershop or a restaurant. And, you know, I just was worried about a lot of those things because I've seen so many players, and I'm not saying that all the players make bad investments, but when you take your money and you put them into those things, it takes a lot of maintenance, and you have to trust other people a lot of times to be able to run that business for you or trust their advice. So I knew going into sports announcement, I could kind of control my own destiny a little bit. I'd be on TV and I'd be in control of me.
Now, did you have any role models from a business standpoint that really kind of, you know, influenced your career, influenced your thought process in the field?
Yeah, I love Bill Lafferty. Love Bill Lafferty. He's one of my favorite guys because he's very funny. He's a charming guy on the scene, on the set, I should say. But he has that knowledge. He has that knowledge, and his delivery is just so smooth, and I really enjoy that. One of my favorite guys growing up was Clark Kellogg. He did a lot of my games when he was working for ESPN. We would do the Big East tournament, and I love the way that he brought his flair. You know, he brought a little bit of hip hop slang to the set, but he also stayed very professional. So I really enjoyed that. And obviously, he had the big names. You know, I grew up on Dick Vitale, his energy, and you know, some of the other guys. But I would say those are the guys who influenced me the most, the ones I named.
Okay. Now, you kind of mentioned a couple of things. Actually, I have so many questions. I'm really enjoying this interview. I'm happy you came on. So I guess the number one thing is, what do you think, and these kind of, both of these questions go hand in hand. When I went on your website, it really seems like you've developed a brand for yourself. You know, you're a freelance sports broadcaster, but it seems like you've really developed a strong brand. You know, I understand, you know, some of the work that you do. Your website's really easy to navigate, and I could see very simply how you can contribute if I had a broadcasting station and what you've done and kind of the flair that you bring. You know, that question, can you tell me a little bit about developing your brand as well as, you know, I think it goes hand in hand, what you think are the characteristics that make someone successful within the broadcasting world? So players that are interested in that field, because I know there's a lot of players that are interested in broadcasting. What are those characteristics that can really allow them to do well within this field? Because there's a lot of people that are that are kind of excelling within it, right? And it's competitive.
Yeah, it's very competitive. You know, every player, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, when they get done, they want to get in broadcasting. So it's a very tough business. I think one of the things you have to do is you have to be prepared. You know, you have to do your research. I don't think people understand how much research goes into doing one college basketball game. You know, I don't think people understand the amount of hours. It may take me 8 hours to prepare for a game that I'm only on the air for 2 hours. You know, when it comes to interviewing the players or talking to the coaching staff, trying to track down the coaches, like Jim Calhoun or Jimmy Boeheim, you know, becoming friends with the assistant coaches where if you can't talk to those head coaches, you can talk to them, the SID, the sports information directors. So there's a lot of research that you have to do to be able to be one of the best. You know, I remember watching Dick Vitale call a Villanova game when I was playing. And I remember him saying, oh, Villanova University, they're going crazy in the Connolly Center. And I thought to myself, the Connolly Center, that's one of our student centers on campus. He must have done some great research to know that we have a student center in the middle of campus where people eat. And he knows the Connolly Center. It wasn't like it was a gym. It was a student center. Students sat and studied and ate lunch. It was a lounge. And that made me realize how much research Vitale did to be ready for a broadcast.
Absolutely.
So I think making sure you're prepared is one of the biggest things. I think another thing when it comes to sports announcing is you have to tell the people something they don't know. You know, if you're watching a game, somebody does a great spin move, hey, you know they did a great spin move if you're watching at home. But I need you to tell me how they do the spin move, why they do the spin move, and why did it work. Not that they do a great spin move and you made a great shot.
Right.
Because everybody at home can see that, you know. So that's something that I learned from some great announcers early in my career. I think that's very important. You have to be very organized. You have to be very organized. I can look at my notes from 2 years ago, and I may still have something on Kemba Walker there that I can use 3 years later, you know, because I save those things, you know, for 5, 6 years before I get rid of them. So I always can go back and say, wow, Kemba Walker was not a great shooter, it says on my scouting report from his freshman year. Now, junior year, he's shooting 40% from the field. I can talk about that in my notes because I'm organized and I save all those things on my computer, you know. So I think a lot of those things are very important. I think the last thing is you have to be yourself. You know, a lot of guys try to come in and, you know, it's great that I like Jay Billis, and it's great that I grew up, you know, listening to Dick Vitale and you know, and also Bill Rafferty. But I also know that I can't try to be those guys. I have to be John Celestan. And if somebody doesn't like who John Celestan is, then you have to move on to the next network. But you can't try to be somebody that you're not. I think people at home can feel that. You have to be you.
And especially in the case where, obviously, you're not the play-by-play announcer, so, you know, you're the one that's commenting on so many of the other items that are happening on the court, whether it's the research side, and you really emphasize doing research, being prepared, being organized. And I think being yourself just goes hand-in-hand with that, because if you're not the play-by-play guy, you really have to put in your own style, your own kind of trademark and imprint on the game.
Yeah, you definitely do. You definitely do. And, you know, the play-by-play guys are great, but you go hand-in-hand with the play-by-play guy. You bring that flavor that people want to hear. So, you know, some people, you know, prefer dry humor. Some people prefer people that are really technical. Like Jay Billis is a guy who's really technical. He's by the book. He breaks down, you know, information. I think a guy like Bill Rafferty is a little bit different. He's more like your grandfather you're watching the game with in the living room. And he's funny. And he's charming, and then he gives you a little bit of that, you know, the breakdown of what's going on in the game as well. So I think every guy is different. But I think you have to bring some type of flair, and you have to have something that people want to tune in and listen and watch what you're doing.
All right. Now, just to make a little pivot here, tell me a little bit about Allstate Basketball and your work with them and the fact that you've co-founded the organization.
Yeah. Well, Allstate Basketball is an organization that I co-founded with one of my high school rivals, Mars Mellish, who played at Manhattan University. We started in the spring, in this past spring, And what I wanted to do was try to start an organization where we were teaching young kids the right way to play basketball and helping kids develop the fundamentals while they're still young. And I wanted to start this because when I was a kid, my high school coach, Paul Shope, would give these camps in the summertime at the different little schools in our town. And we learned so much at 11, 12, and 13 by attending these camps. And they don't have a lot of those camps in this area anymore. You have your big, large camps like the Hoop Group and the Five Star that have been around for a long time. But there's no mom-and-pop smaller camps where you may get 30, 40 kids there where you can really give those kids, you know, some attention and you can really break down the fundamentals. You know, and one thing that I've seen in the game, and the fundamentals are starting to lack, and I think that's because there's so much AAU, so many kids traveling and playing on different teams with kids they don't know, so many kids trying to dunk and go right to the NBA, they're forgetting about the fundamentals. So we've been learning these fundamentals at a young age, and I just wanted to try to do that in my area here in Central Jersey, which when I was growing up was a hotbed for basketball. But now Central New Jersey, and obviously New Jersey is one of the best places for high school basketball, but Central New Jersey, where I live, has taken a little bit of a back seat to North Jersey and South Jersey.
Right.
So Mars and I wanted to come and try to help these kids at a young age so Central Jersey could be back on the map in the Garden State.
Definitely. And, I mean, you referred to Jersey being a hotbed for high school basketball, and I know the St. Anthony's, that's the home of St. Anthony's, number one school in the country for basketball, right?
Yeah, well, a lot of schools, not just St. Anthony. You know, St. Anthony, we also have St. Patrick, which is about 10 miles away in Elizabeth, New Jersey. We had Patterson Catholic, which just shut down. We had St. Benedict's Prep in Newark. So there are tons of great high schools. Christian Brothers Academy down in Lincroft, New Jersey. There are so many big-time basketball programs here in the state of New Jersey. It's unreal. You can see three of the top high school basketball teams in the country within 10 miles of each other. So every year, you know, this is a great place for high school basketball. I don't think there's any place better.
Really? Okay, that's fantastic, man. You know what? I think that, you know, we've covered a lot on this show. This has been an awesome show, actually. Obviously, just going back to some of the points that John has mentioned, when you're transitioning, really try to figure out what you enjoy, what you're good at, and explore different careers. And the only way you can do that is by talking to people, finding out about what they do, and testing it out, maybe doing an internship for the couple of hours that you have, and really discovering what it is that you like, what it is that you don't like. Another thing that he mentioned in regards to individuals that are interested in sports broadcasting, be prepared, be organized, and be yourself. Awesome points. Awesome points, John.
Right.
Can I get one last comment? And that is, tell me a little bit about every show we do a pay it forward moment. So at the end of every show, we like to do a pay it forward moment. And I just want you to give me, a 1 minute brief about what you think are some of the most important points. And I know you've given a lot of it today. Some of the most important points for young aspiring basketball players that want to play professional, both domestic and international, and some of our current players. Some of the things that you can suggest to them through the experiences that you've had.
Well, obviously, as far as being an athlete, you have to put the time in. You have to put more time in. I played with Kobe Bryant, and he was the hardest worker I ever saw. So you have to put that time in when you're working on your game from an athletic standpoint. But while you're putting that time in, don't wait until it's over. Still continue to have your nose in other things. You know, continue to work some internships. Network while you're playing. Don't wait until the game is over, the ball stops bouncing, to begin to network, to begin to go to networking events. Hang with people that are outside of athletics. Too many athletes just hang with athletes, and that's it. There's so many other people that are in this world that can help you out when, you know, your career in sports is over. Be well-rounded. Don't just be a jock. Make sure you get out there. You meet a lot of different people. And I guess put the same amount of effort in your post-career as you put into athletics. If you were able to make the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, you are one of the most successful people in the world. And if you can take that same work ethic and put it into your life outside of sports, why couldn't you be just as successful for the second time?
Wow, John, that was an absolutely fantastic last piece, pay it forward moment. I want to thank you so much for this interview. I know my listeners really enjoyed this. This has been a great interview. Once again, so many key points, and I encouraged everyone that's listening to just rewind the track and just go through it, write it down, take notes, and really implement this in the things that you do on a daily basis, because some of these points here, most of them actually, can be used in any field, any area. And it's really about taking advantage of the opportunities that you have. So, John, once again, man, I want to thank you for coming on the Post Game Plan with myself. And it's been a pleasure. And I hope to, you know, once again, we can connect in a couple of months. And I'll be delighted to have you back on, man.
Anytime. It'd be awesome. It was a joy to be on. Thanks a lot. Love to help out.
All right, man. This is the Post Game Plan. You've just tuned in with your host, Ali Samani, and John Celestin. We really hope you guys enjoyed the show. Please let me know if you have any comments. Shoot them down right below. And we'll see you guys next show. Take care.